Make Me Smart is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know around here we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to school to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million.
Anyway. Well, we're back into the swing of things. We're back.
And there, I believe, is Charles. I don't even know who that is. It's probably Jake or somebody. Anyway. Everybody, I'm Kyle Rusdahl. Welcome back to Make Me. He's a minute early. By George. I'm Kyle Rusdahl. Welcome back to Make Me Smart, where we make the day make sense. Phew.
Or at least make a generalized attempt. And I'm Kimberly Adams, back from vacation, just in time for What Do You Want to Know Wednesday, when we answer your questions. And you can email us those questions to makemesmart@marketplace.org or leave us a voicemail. Our number is 508-UB-SMART. And with that, Kai Sai, here's our first one.
Hey, Make Me Smart team. It's Melissa from San Francisco. Hey. I'm not cool enough to have a Twitter account, but somehow Elon Musk is all over my news feed. So can you make me smart?
Wow. I guess I should take this one.
Go ahead.
This was like the news that would just like, you know, hit me in the face as soon as I logged back into everything coming back from vacation. And I should say it's very funny because when I was listening back to the show, I believed that you bet one of your entire paychecks?
I might have done that, yes.
He wasn't going to buy Twitter. Anyway, yeah. So yes, lots to say here. Within the space of like 11 days, Elon Musk, who is the CEO of SpaceX and Tesla, said he was going to buy Twitter. Twitter then tried to create this like poison pill shareholder rights plan to stop that sale. Then Twitter backed off from it and abandoned that poison pill and accepted Elon's offer to the tune of about $44 billion, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. So now it looks like the world's richest man is going to control one of the world's largest social media platforms. And in terms of what he says he wants to do, he says he wants to promote, and I'm putting this in air quotes, free speech, which to him, based on what we know so far, means less content moderation. He doesn't like the idea of banning people. So some folks are thinking that he's going to bring back some of the people who've been banned from Twitter, most infamously Donald Trump, but we don't know for sure. He also wants to make the algorithm that, you know, helps Twitter feed you different things and make certain tweets more popular. He wants to open that up and allow it to be more open source so people can see how it works. And he says he's going to, you know, go after the spam and bot accounts, possibly by forcing everyone to verify who has an account that they're a real human, which could have some problems for activists in other parts of the world who need to be on, or even here in the United States, who may need to be anonymous.
Yeah.
And then, you know, much to the hope of many Twitter users, he says he might consider an edit button. So this is going to potentially mean a lot of changes for what it's like to use Twitter. It could mean changes for who uses Twitter. So there is this example that Marissa put in here. On Monday, several big accounts like Katy Perry, Barack Obama, and others lost hundreds of thousands of followers, while some other accounts, including Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene, and I saw Donald Trump Jr. posting about this, gained large numbers of followers. Twitter says this was organic, reflecting people deactivating or making new accounts, but lots of folks are suspicious. So that was a long answer.
Yeah.
But
Yeah. I mean, look, I have a medium-sized account, and I lost like 2,000 followers. Not that I track it all the time, but, you know, I went back and I had a look. And so...
You do not have a medium-sized account, Kai.
Well, all right.
Like, on what scale?
Well, I mean, well, compared to, you know, Katy Perry and Elon Musk and Barack Obama. But look, so here's... Yes to everything Kimberly said. I also think this, and it's not my fault. It's Walt Mossberg, who was for many, many years the tech guy at the Wall Street Journal. He basically came out the day this news broke of the actual sale and said, you know what? A zillion things are going to happen between now and the time the deal closes. We just don't know. And I think that's right. We just don't know, you know?
And one of the things that... You know, you and I have had this conversation because sometimes we do like Twitter call outs looking for sources and things like that. Mm-hmm. But only like 23% of Americans even use Twitter. Yeah. That's less than the number of people who use YouTube. And so Marissa was citing Pew as did this report as of 2021. Only 23% of Americans use Twitter compared to 81% of those who use YouTube and 69% who use Facebook. And who uses Twitter is pretty skewed, you know, tend to be... Actually, let me not even give stats. I don't know. But it's not representative of America. I'm just going to say that.
We all know it's not representative. But look, one more thought on this, and then we should probably move on. For me, the issue is not... And I, when I talked to Lauren Hirsch about this the day the news broke from the New York Times, who's been covering this story for since the beginning, it's not about the 23% of American users. And it's not about, ooh, Elon Musk is being a jerk, although it's a little bit about that. It's about an American oligarch, right, buying a global communications platform. That's what it's about. And that, I think, is the part that gives a lot of people pause. Rightly so.
But how different is that from Jeff Bezos owning the Washington Post? Or
I'll tell you exactly how it's different. I'll tell you exactly how it's different, right? Jeff Bezos bought an established journalism institution and said at the jump, I'm going to keep my hands off. And as far as we know, he has. Other than that democracy dies in darkness tagline, right? That apparently was him. But other than that, he's kept his hands off. And there are professional journalists, right, who abide by a code of conduct that is established over literally centuries, right? Yeah. Twitter is a bleeping free-for-all, right? Run by and now about to be owned by, I don't know who's going to run it, a guy who has demonstrated very, very loose connections to standards of conduct or, I mean, any of those things. And I think that's the fundamental difference.
Yeah, that's fair. For me. All right, we should move on.
Let's. Okay. Well, why don't we just hit the tape? Go.
Hey, this is Maggie from Okeechobee, Florida. I am a parts manager at a power sports dealership. So the past two years of the pandemic, I've got to see how long it takes, you know, suppliers and manufacturers to get parts. And I've had a running joke that depending on how long my back order queue is, you know, how long the pandemic's going to last. And I've seen it shrink and lengthen bunch of times. Now, my question for you guys is there any truth to that? Is there any barometer? Could we use shipping containers? Could we use parts on back order? Could we use microchips that shows us how long we really are going to be in this supply-induced pandemic? Or is it all just, you know, buckle down for the next couple of years because things will just never be the same?
Oh, yeah. Really good question. And the answer to all of those questions in there is yes, because number one, it is buckled down because this is going to be with us for a while. The Biden administration says so. The Federal Reserve says so, right? This is a supply challenge that all of us are having. And let's back up for a second and talk about where Maggie is, right? She's a parts manager at a power sports dealership, right? So she is one step removed from the end user. So between the time that something gets off a containerized ship and gets to Maggie, it's gone through storage in a warehouse. It's gone through train transport and truck transport. So there's a lot of things that happen on the way that would account for Maggie's individual order list expanding and contracting. But the thing I look at is container ships waiting at the Port of Los Angeles and Long Beach. Number one, it's because I'm here. And number two, I've done reporting down there. But number three, something like 40% of all the containerized goods in this entire economy come through that port that's 15 miles down the road from me, right? And here's some context. On the 9th of January, that backlog of containerized ships reached its pandemic high of 109. Today, it's about 45 or 50. Okay, so it's getting better, but slowly. But oh, look, the port of Shanghai and Ningbo over in China are now currently locked down. And their backlog of ships waiting in, coming in to load is way up. So you just got a deal. You just got a deal.
So As you know, recently had reason to be in multiple large ports in Europe. And I could not help.
You were in Europe?
Yes, wow. I was in Europe. Yes.
Nice.
No, it wasn't. Parts of it were. But anyway, that's another story.
All right.
But I was paying attention to this because of all the reporting that we've been doing on this. And so I was looking and seeing like how many ships were docked. How many ships were at anchor, container ships were at anchor, like out from the port? How many ships were there? How high the stacks of containers were at the various ports? And it was very different at each of them. Some of them you could see like six or seven ships, which I know is relatively small compared to the ports that you're talking about, at anchor, way out from the port, in not many containers hanging out. But in another one, the containers were stacked like super high and past a lot of LNG ships, believe it or not.
Oh, yeah.
In moving around, moving around Europe.
Yep.
So that was very fascinating. I'd never seen one of those before, but I saw several. Hmm. And then several ferries with trucks on them carrying LNG and other types of gas. So it was fascinating to watch stuff moving around.
Oh, yeah. That's so interesting about the LNG ships. Holy cow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Man.
I suppose I should give some context to that. So because, you know, Russian oil is being cut off and the sort of global energy shock, that means that more people are looking to get liquefied natural gas to Europe because Europe has now various types of fuel shortages because they're not buying oil from Russia and coal from Russia. And so there has to be a lot more energy moving into Europe from other places. So I'm guessing that's some of what I was seeing.
Yep.
Okay.
Totally.
All right. Let's try to get this last one in.
Sorry.
Right.
Come on. Let's have a good little chat. We haven't talked in a long time.
We're having a good
Adams.
Don't shut
me down. No, I'm kidding.
Okay. So here's another question about supply chains, this time at the grocery store.
Hi, this is Leslie from Spartanburg, South Carolina. And I have a question about the food supply chain. I have just left my local big box retailer, and I noticed that things like chicken breast and ground beef are in short supply, but things like giant packages of chicken drumsticks and huge boxes of marinated and ready-to-go pork roast are all over the shelves.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with mixed vegetables versus single-ingredient vegetables. And I'm wondering, why are so many of the prepared foods and more processed foods more available right now than some of the single ingredient foods? Thanks for making us smart.
It's a really good question.
So, it is a good question. And I also have seen this in the store where you can get like all of the frozen stuff, but not as much of the fresh stuff as often. But to get a more technical explanation than what I see in the grocery store, yesterday we called up Veronica Nye, who's a senior economist with the American Farm Bureau Federation. And she says it all comes down to something that many of us kind of do in the kitchen, which is ingredient substitution.
In a processed product, they have the opportunity to find substitutes for a product in short supply. Whereas if it's a single ingredient item, that's a lot harder to do. So, you know, if your item requires tomato paste, well, then maybe you can use tomato sauce. If you're thinking about an item that is a pre-made meal kit, oftentimes those type of food manufacturers will use a different cut of meat, perhaps, than they normally would. Mm-hmm. And so that gives them a lot more flexibility.
So remember, like, the great chicken wing shortage of,
when
was that? Like last year or something, and all of a sudden all of these places were just, instead of there being chicken wings, they were selling the chicken drumsticks or chicken thighs or, you know, whatever. They had to swap it out for something else. If it had been chicken noodle soup that they were selling, they wouldn't have had to do a rebrand because nobody would have really known because chunks of chicken, whatever. So, you know, Veronica pointed out also, well, maybe certain people have a more refined palate and notice exactly part of the chicken.
Chunks of chicken does it. I totally get it. Totally get it. Chunks of chicken.
Okay. So, but Veronica also pointed out that when you're talking about processed foods, a lot of these foods are often frozen or shelf stable, like they don't need refrigeration or anything. So you can kind of stockpile those and keep them in cold storage. And so you may have had more supply sort of in reserve. And so they're less, that stock is less sensitive to temporary shortages than maybe fresh fruit foods are. So, I mean, if you have, you know, a box of frozen peas, you can stick that in the freezer and sell it 6 months later. But if you're selling fresh peas, you know, those are going to be good to sell for like, what, a week or two max. So that's one of the things. Oh, and then, one other thing.
What?
There is a big issue affecting the supply of eggs and poultry products in particular right now, which is an outbreak of the avian flu, which has affected over 33 million birds in 29 states since January. And it's so contagious. And folks may remember this from the last time we had a bird flu outbreak. When it shows up in a flock of chickens, they often have to kill the entire flock because they're so worried about it.
I had totally missed that. I was not aware that that was going on.
Oh, yeah. That was going on before I left. I remember.
Wow.
Okay.
Totally missed it.
Yeah.
Totally missed it. All right.
Well,
there we go.
Now you know. You got made smart.
Now you know. Got made smart. We'll call it there. We'll save that last one, Bridget, and you can roll it in next Wednesday. We're coming back tomorrow. We're going to do the news, do some Make Me Smiles, regular Thursday show for you.
Yes, and keep sending us your questions for What Do You Want to Know Wednesday. We promise to stay on task and not have so many tangents. You can email us, makemesmart@marketplace.org, or leave us a voicemail at 508-UB-SMART.
Oh, man.
Stream of consciousness.
You can't riff on your own podcast, for crying out loud. Producer schmeducers. Hosts are in charge sometimes. Once the microphones go on, the hosts are in charge.
Never.
All right. Make Me Smart is produced by Marissa Cabrera. Today with help from Rose Conlin, our interns, Tiffany Bowie.
And today's show was engineered by Jake Cherry, Ben Talladay, and Daniel Ramirez, composed our theme music, and our senior producer is Bridget Bodner.
Bridget.
Bridget.
There we go.
Strong communication skills are critical for success in business and in life. Hi, I'm Matt Abrahams, and I host Stanford Graduate School of Business's Think Fast, Talk Smart, the podcast. Each week, I sit down with experts to discuss the best tips to help you with your communication skills, from conflict management to mastering small talk to tackling communication anxiety. Join us and start to develop and hone your communication skills. Listen every Tuesday wherever you get your podcasts or on YouTube.